You're listening to Defending Faith, Family, and Freedom, featuring Gary Bauer, Senior Vice President of Public Policy at the Dr. James Dobson Family Institute. And now, here's Gary.
Hi, this is Gary Bauer, Senior Vice President for Public Policy and Culture at the James Dobson Family Institute. Welcome to our podcast, Defending Faith, Family, and Freedom. I'm glad you're with us. Tell your friends about us and be sure to check in regularly about our latest commentary on what's going on in Washington, D.C. and around the world that may affect you and your family and have an impact on faith, family, and freedom. Well, you know, there's that old joke, not a very nice joke if you're involved in government or politics, but it goes some variation of this. How can you tell when a politician or a government official is lying? And the answer is their lips are moving. So again, not a very pleasant thing, but we've all got a lot of experience, right, of hearing a politician saying one thing when they're running for office, they get into office, they do something else. On the Republican side, remember when George Bush, the senior, said, "Read my lips, no new taxes." And he promptly won the election and then raised taxes. And to make it even worse, when somebody said, "Hey, what happened to read my lips?" he turned it into a joke. He kind of swiveled a little bit and he said, "Read my hips." Yeah, very funny, George. It guaranteed him to be a one-term president. But every once in a while, a president gives a speech, or an elected official or an appointed official gives a speech that's really important in which truth is spoken, which is why it makes it important. Ronald Reagan gave a lot of speeches like that. Remember when he went to Berlin and stood outside next to the Berlin Wall and said, "Mr. Gorbachev, tear down this wall." And everybody said, "Yes, yeah, sounds really good, but boy, what's he think, Gorbachev's going to take his orders?" Well, by saying those words, by speaking that truth, it ended up setting in place a group of events that took place that, yep, ended up with the Berlin Wall coming down. Well, there was a speech given this month by Secretary of State Marco Rubio, and I think it's got a chance of becoming one of those historic speeches that people refer to many years later. Now, I could be wrong about that, but I think the content of the speech is something that you've heard the president say in his own way, and the vice president, and it's a regular theme of the administration. But Marco Rubio gave this speech in Europe to an audience that I would say would not necessarily be friendly. So let me just mention briefly, centuries ago, when, because this kind of gives the context of the speech, centuries ago, when Islam was conquering Europe, I'm pretty sure I don't need to tell you that Islam was not essentially a faith that spread by persuasion. It spread by the sword. You either accepted the faith or you were made a slave or you were killed. And over a number of centuries, Islamic armies jutted into Europe and they were stopped at a number of different European cities only when a Christian leader would spring up and lead an army of medieval knights, you know, the guys with the spears on their horses, and drive back those Islamic armies. Or if they had not done that, if they bought into the idea that the Christianity was a pacifist faith, all of Europe would already be Islamic. I can't even imagine what that would have meant for the course of history. I bring this up because Marco Rubio was not on a horse and he wasn't carrying a spear, but he sure did ride over into Europe, into Cologne, Germany, and confront some really big issues. And he did it by making the case for Western civilization, for Judeo-Christian civilization. Rubio spoke to the leaders of European nations whose churches are empty while their mosques are overflowing. Christian religious liberty in Europe is under great pressure. Now, this audience, interestingly enough, was made up of a lot of defense officials from various European countries, Germany, Spain, France, Italy, et cetera. Some Scandinavian countries. There were representatives of Great Britain. So many of the attendees there were men and women who make their living trying to keep their countries safe from threats. So as you can imagine, there's a lot of angst about Russia's invasion of Ukraine and how that's going to go, how that's going to play itself out. But there are a lot of other issues too. And as I said, religious liberty, Christian religious liberty in Europe is under pressure. The churches are often empty. The mosques are overflowing. Many of these leaders have allowed a massive wave of third world migration to swipe their countries. Western European nations must secure their borders, or Europe will now, didn't in the past, but it now will become a Muslim-dominant continent unless these countries and their leaders wake up. Secretary of State Rubio warned them they were committing cultural and national suicide. He told them not to be afraid. And by the way, that is one of the most frequent commands in the Bible, fear not. So even in this theme of the speech where he's telling the leaders of armies and navies, don't be afraid to defend your civilization. That's a pretty big deal. Well, look, the speech was, it was articulate. It was moving in many cases. We're all busy. I'm sure you don't get up on a typical day and say, hey, dear, are there any speeches by members of the Trump cabinet that I should be listening to today? But you probably did hear in recent days that this speech by Rubio was a very important speech and one that got rave reviews. And actually, and this is hard to believe, it actually got a standing ovation at the end of the speech, which made me wonder whether they were really listening to everything that he said. We have to wait and see. But I'm going to play some excerpts from you. And these are a little bit longer than I would normally play. But I think it's important out of this 40-minute speech, I've picked just a few minutes. So let's begin with right at the beginning of the speech, the first few minutes of the speech, he reminds Europe of our shared heritage. And how he describes that heritage is really important. Listen to this.
For the United States and Europe, we belong together. America was founded 250 years ago, but the roots began here on this continent long before. The men who settled and built the nation of my birth arrived on our shores carrying the memories and the traditions and the Christian faith of their ancestors as a sacred inheritance, an unbreakable link between the old world and the new. We are part of one civilization, Western civilization. We are bound to one another by the deepest bonds that nations could share, forged by centuries of shared history, Christian faith, culture, heritage, language, ancestry, and the sacrifices our forefathers made together for the common civilization to which we have fallen heir.
Okay, I don't know if that grabbed everybody. We're used to hearing some of this phraseology. Sadly, in Europe, they are not. Now, first of all, he reminds them it's the 250th anniversary of America's birth. Well, why would he do that? Well, because America was born out of the people who came from Europe to the colonies. And then he describes the roots of what they brought with them when they came to America. You know, they came from all those countries in Europe, Spain, Italy, France, et cetera, different types of immigrants, but they had things in common. And Rubio specifically says their memories and their traditions, yeah, sure, and the Christian faith of their ancestors as a sacred inheritance, an unbreakable link between the old world and the new. So right up front, in a continent that's becoming less Christian and in a continent that increasingly restricts Christian religious liberty, he's reminding them that when their ancestors came to the United States, they brought with them their Christian faith, which is what made America, when we finally became an independent nation 250 years ago, made us what we are. And then he kind of brings it all together by saying, all of us, you in this audience representing all these European nations and us in the United States, we comprise Western civilization. We are bound to each other, he said, by the deepest bonds that nations can possibly share. And that sharing of these bonds has been over centuries that's tied us together. And he lists them again. And the first one is the Christian faith, our culture, our heritage, our language, our ancestry, and the sacrifices our forefathers made to preserve the civilization that we're now trying to pass on to our children and grandchildren. Look, there would have been a lot of people in this audience. I've been in front of enough international audiences, even though I've never held a position like Secretary of State. They're very uncomfortable talking about this sort of thing. They don't want to be reminded of their Christian heritage. What's happening in Europe, and there's an attempt to make it happen here, is this move toward global secularism, which is a threat not only to those nations and is a threat to the United States, but it's a threat to Christianity. It's this idea that religion and the Christian faith, that's old stuff, that's fiction, that's non-scientific. We're globalists. We believe in all these new values. Well, that will be the death of Western civilization, Judeo-Christian civilization, if we continue to go down that road. Now, it would have been forgiven, I think, by a lot of people if Rubio would have brought up these references to our Christian faith and our Christian heritage and tell this European audience, those were you Europeans that brought that Christian heritage to us in the new continent, and we took it very seriously, and we built our republic on it, as we've talked about in our conversations many times. So he could have breathed a little sigh of relief after that and thought to himself, well, I did my little, sop to the Christian base of President Trump. There's no reason to delve into this anymore. Now I can get into the other stuff that this audience will be much more comfortable with. But that's not what Rubio did. By the way, Rubio is a Christian. I know him fairly well. Our oldest daughter worked for him for a number of years. He cares deeply about his Christian faith. He cares deeply about the freedom of religion. So this is another little reminder that he gives the audience about what's really important.
And this is the place where the vaulted ceilings of the Sistine Chapel and the towering spires of the great cathedral in Cologne, they testify not just to the greatness of our past or to a faith in God that inspired these marvels. They foreshadow the wonders that await us in our future. But only if we are unapologetic in our heritage and proud of this common inheritance can we together begin the work of envisioning and shaping our economic and our political future.
Okay, so now, I don't know if the European audience knew exactly what he was trying to say here, but he mentions two places, the Sistine Chapel and the towering spires of the great cathedral in Cologne. And he says these two places are evidence of the greatness of our past and of our faith in God that inspired the building of these two places. But they're, in their own way, they represent something else, too. They represent the future, that if we are unapologetic about our past, that we spring out of the Christian faith, this will give us confidence to confront the competing civilizations we're confronted with today, not the least of which is the Islamic civilization. And, of course, there's something else that we're wrestling with, and that's godless Marxism that controls communist China and is even sinking its roots in places in Europe. And I don't need to remind you that we have Marxists running all over the United States on university faculties. A cultural Marxist has now been elected mayor of New York City, for crying out loud. So let's just take a couple seconds and focus on these two places he mentioned. The Sistine Chapel. The Sistine Chapel is famous for the frescoes on the ceiling of the chapel that were produced by the famous artist Michelangelo. And do you remember what the scenes are that are on the chapel ceiling? They're from Genesis. That one is the depiction of the creation of Adam. So he's reminding the Europeans that one of the most famous buildings in Europe, the Sistine Chapel, on its very ceiling is a drawing, is a fresco that refers to the Bible, the Old Testament, and the story of the creation of Adam. On one wall, there's a bunch of artist renditions of the life of Christ. And on the other wall, there's illustrations of the life of Moses. Behind the altar, there is a rendition of the final judgment of mankind. Now, it's kind of interesting to me because if you look at some of the debates we're having, not only in the United States, but all over Europe and throughout the Western world, there are debates about, well, what is the definition of marriage? You know, for years it was a man and a woman. It's been redefined, I don't need to tell you. And the redefinition's a really big deal. And I don't think we have still realized all the consequences when we decided, or more accurately, when by a 5-4 vote on the Supreme Court, it was decided that a definition of marriage that goes all the way back to Genesis would be jettisoned and a new definition would be brought up so that men could marry men and women could marry women. If you go back and read those early chapters of Genesis, you are told about what God created. He created men and women, not men, women, and 56 other genders. So even the whole trans ideology debate is really settled by the book of Genesis. I don't think it's a coincidence that this is what Marco Rubio points to when he points to the Sistine Chapel, without getting bogged down into all the debates we're having now. Well, what about the other reference to the great cathedral in Cologne? My friends, if you've never been there and there's some way you can go, go. If not, you know, just Google it or look up a reference book or whatever. This is one of the great architectural wonders of the world, given when it was built. Gavin Newsom, the governor of California, he's taken about 20 years to try to build a fast train that was supposed to connect two major cities in California. I don't think that train's ever going to get built, but I digress. The cathedral in Cologne, before there was any, you know, manufacturing or construction equipment or whatever, 600 years to build it. How is that possible that they would work on it for 600 years? You realize what that says? It means that tens of thousands of people literally spent their entire lives working on that cathedral, knowing they would never see the completed project. Well, why would you do that? Why would you spend your whole life toiling at something you would never see the end of? Because you believed Christian civilization was worth preserving and teaching to the generations that would follow. They were building this for generations they would never see, their children would never see, their grandchildren would never see, their great-grandchildren would never see. 600 years. It's now a world site of something or other. You know, it's significant as a religious site, but now it's like sort of an architectural curiosity. By the way, in World War II, Cologne is in Germany, and Cologne was massively bombed by the Allies. It is hard to describe what was done to that city. Now, many of the Allied bombers were told to try to avoid a number of different places in Cologne, but certainly try to avoid this cathedral. If you go look at the photos, you will see devastation all around the cathedral. Long before there were things called smart bombs. You know, there was no guided missiles or the bombs in World War II were dumb bombs. If you got within a half mile of your target, that was a miracle. And yet somehow the Cologne Cathedral avoided being bombed. Some people think it was a miracle. I'm willing to think that it may very well have been a miracle. Well, later in the speech, Rubio gets very specific about how different countries in Europe brought, the people from those countries brought different things to America. There's a little bit of humor in this, but I found it really very moving because these Europeans who came, whether they were Germans or Frenchmen or wherever they came from, they came here not trying to change the place that would become America. They came here to embrace the place that would become America. He says it much better than I'm saying it, so let's hear him describe this.
Our story began with an Italian explorer whose adventure into the great unknown to discover a new world brought Christianity to the Americas and became the legend that defined the imagination of our pioneer nation. Our first colonies were built by English settlers, to whom we owe not just the language we speak, but the whole of our political and legal system. Our frontiers were shaped by Scots-Irish, that proud, hardy clan from the hills of Ulster that gave us Davy Crockett and Mark Twain and Teddy Roosevelt and Neil Armstrong. Our great Midwestern heartland was built by German farmers and craftsmen who transformed empty plains into a global agricultural powerhouse. And by the way, dramatically upgraded the quality of American beer. Our expansion into the interior followed the footsteps of French fur traders and explorers whose names, by the way, still adorn the street signs and town names all across the Mississippi Valley. Our horses, our ranches, our rodeos, the entire romance of the cowboy archetype that became synonymous with the American West. These were born in Spain. And our largest and most iconic city was named New Amsterdam before it was named New York.
Well, as you see, right away, he refers again to the Italian explorer, Christopher Columbus, who brings to the New World Christianity and becomes a legend that defined the imagination of our pioneer nation. So he starts right off by bringing up Christopher Columbus, but he brings him up as a Christian that planted the cross of Jesus Christ. Now, I don't need to tell you, there's a war going on against Christopher Columbus. He has been called every name under the books. Some areas in the United States don't celebrate Columbus Day anymore. They celebrate the Indigenous Peoples Day as a replacement. The president, President Trump, is restoring the position of Columbus Day. He praises Columbus every chance that he gets. And Marco Rubio starts his description of what Europe brought to America with Christopher Columbus. And then he goes through the different ethnic groups in Europe and what they brought. That from the English settlers, we got our language, our political and legal system. A lot of what the founders did was built on English law, on the common law, which springs out of England. And then he refers to the Scots-Irish people, and he says they're a proud, hardy clan. And I thought it was fantastic that he named some examples, Davy Crockett, Mark Twain, Teddy Roosevelt, the astronaut, Neil Armstrong. You know what he did not say? Those people, many of them, settled by the hundreds of thousands in what is Appalachia. So all the way from western Pennsylvania down into West Virginia, into eastern Ohio, on down through a portion of the South. in that area of the country, heavily populated by the Scotch-Irish, to this very day, its young men and women volunteer for the American military at higher levels than any other population group in the United States. Isn't that amazing? They come from a history of strong clans that fought, had to fight in their own European history, and they came here and they loved America from the very beginning. And for their entire time in America, generation after generation, they are the first to get in line, willing to lay down their lives for their country. It's an amazing thing to think of. And then there were the German settlements in the Midwest, where I grew up, right across the river from Cincinnati, Ohio. He makes a little beer joke there. And then he talks about the French. We bought the Louisiana Purchase from the French. And that was part of the major expansion that took place of the United States. And there's still a very noticeable French heritage in New Orleans and sections of Louisiana today. And a Frenchman, the Marquis Lafayette, was one of the heroes of the American Revolution. He felt great ties to the United States. And so he came here during our revolution, and he fought alongside of the early Americans against British rule. He was considered a national hero of the United States. Lafayette Square in Washington, D.C. is named after him. Many years later, he returned to the United States, and he visited over the course of over a year, I think like 15 different cities. And everywhere he went, people turned out by the tens of thousands. I think this is correct, that at the time, no other individual had been seen by more people than a Frenchman who had played a major role in helping us gain our freedom from England. America is a story of all of those people. And by the way, they're not immigrants. That's not really the right word, because when these people groups are coming here, there's no country here. They're not immigrating to another country. They were settlers. They were going to a new continent to settle it, to build communities. It was only later that they bound themselves together and formed a new nation, which is the United States of America. By the way, you can see the evidence of all of this that Rubio summarizes in just these few paragraphs. And you can see it by just looking at a map of the United States. Because one of the things all these different immigrants from different European nations had in common is they are all coming from Christian countries. And they're bringing their Christianity with them. So they knew the Bible. And as they settled in different places around America, they did the most natural thing in the world. They gave the cities biblical names. So, for example, the name Salem is common in New England. Lebanon is the name of cities in Ohio and Pennsylvania. Hebron, there's cities in Ohio, Indiana, where I grew up in Kentucky, in North Dakota. Nazareth, Antioch, very common names of now, in many cases, smaller towns, but all over America. Rehoboth and Bethany. It's two beaches a couple of hours from Washington, D.C. I doubt if one person laying on those beaches out of 1,000 have any idea that the names came from the Bible. And of course, right in the suburbs of Washington, D.C. is Bethesda. Very liberal part of the state. If the people in Bethesda actually knew where the name came from, it's probably good that they don't. There'd probably be a petition to name it something else. Well, again, this might not seem like a big deal, but to give this speech in front of a European, secular, globalist audience is a very big deal. Now, I want to play one more clip for you, because I know that Secretary of State Rubio and Vice President Vance and President Trump and probably at least half of America, believes that Europe is in scary decline, terminal decline, that if it doesn't wake up soon, it's not going to have to worry about foreign enemies. They will have collapsed internally from their own inability or unwillingness to defend Judeo-Christian civilization. So let's listen to sort of the closing paragraph of Secretary of State Rubio's speech.
And this is why we do not want our allies to be weak, because that makes us weaker. We want allies who can defend themselves so that no adversary will ever be tempted to test our collective strength. This is why we do not want our allies to be shackled by guilt and shame. We want allies who are proud of their culture and of their heritage, who understand that we are heirs to the same great and noble civilization, and who together with us are willing and able to defend it. And this is why we do not want allies to rationalize the broken status quo rather than reckon with what is necessary to fix it. For we in America have no interest in being polite and orderly caretakers of the West's managed decline. We do not seek to separate, but to revitalize an old friendship and renew the greatest civilization in human history.
Okay, he says it as directly as you can say it. We want allies who are proud of their culture and their heritage. We don't want to be shackled there, and that's a tough word. You know, you usually are allies with somebody voluntarily, right? He said, we don't want to be shackled by allies that are filled with guilt and shame. What's he mean? Well, European leaders, European elites feel guilty and shame about Western civilization, about our history, our shared history. This civilization has produced more freedom for more people and more opportunity for more people than any competitive system of government in the history of the world. Why would European leaders feel guilt and shame? And then the last sentence, which grabbed me by the throat, the clearest thing I can come up with recently that had the same impact on me was when Charlie Kirk's wife said Charlie wanted to save the boys of the West. That's a task that we have to do. Rubio speaks a little bit more broadly, but he says it very clearly. We in America have no interest in being polite and orderly caretakers of the West's managed decline. He's telling these leaders, we know what you're doing. By opening your borders and allowing millions, literally millions of mostly Muslim migrants to pour into your countries, while you abandon your Christian faith, and not only abandon it, but begin to shrink the religious liberty of those Christians that still live in your countries, we know what you're doing. You're managing your own decline. And if that's what you expect us to be an ally of, we're not interested. But if you're willing to defend the great civilization we share, a civilization built on the political philosophies of Athens and Rome, but of the spiritual qualities and teachings of Jerusalem and of the Bible, now you're talking. That we will stand with you to defend. That and only that will we stand with you to defend. I think this is a God thing. I really believe that it's not a coincidence that while we are celebrating our 250th birthday, that we have a president, vice president, a secretary of state, and many other people in this government who, even if you disagree with them on some things, if you are a follower of Jesus Christ, I hope you agree with them that the wonder of this civilization, the wonder of this country, is its Christian heritage. And without that, we are doomed. Everything this administration's doing this year to celebrate our birthday, God will be front and center. I talked to you a week or so ago about the day of prayer and fasting that the president has already called around the country in an event here on the Mall in Washington, D.C. So this is going to be a common theme, what Rubio just said. But look what's happening. They're not only saying it here. They're not only saying it to the American people. They're saying it to our allies in Europe. They are attempting to save Western civilization, Judeo-Christian civilization. If we can save Europe from their bad decisions, we will not only save them, but we have a good chance of saving us too. That's something worth fighting for. God bless you. Thank you for tuning in as always. We'll be back with you again soon.
Subscribe to Gary Bauer's Defending Faith, Family, and Freedom, where you find your favorite podcasts. Just hit the subscribe button to ensure you receive every episode.